April again.
Right, we're looking at Agenda Papers 3. In June 2012, the Interpretation Committee received a request for clarification about IAS-1, and there are two papers about going concern for discussion today. I'm afraid it's not included in the papers today, but if we were discussing a justification for treating this as a narrow focus amendment to IAS-1, and it seems that we are, this really arose, I think, as a result of the financial crisis. Many people were concerned that there were a number of very high-profile failures where an entity would reach its year-end, a couple of months later the accounts would be signed and published, and a couple of months later it would no longer be a going concern and the entity would fail, and people were concerned that there had been no disclosure about this problem. So that's why the Interpretations Committee think that we need to address this as a narrow focus amendment on a reasonably tight time frame, which would be shorter than the annual improvements time frame. There are two papers about going concern for discussion today. Paper 3A is about the disclosure requirements about an assessment of going concern, and paper 3B deals with the time frame for that assessment. So if we look first at paper 3A about a proposed narrow focus amendment to IAS-1, IAS-1 contains guidance on when financial statements should be prepared on a going concern basis, and it also requires that when management are aware of material uncertainties about the entity's ability to continue as a going concern, those uncertainties should be disclosed. Our outreach indicated that the guidance relating to the basis of preparation of the financial statements works well, but that there was diversity in practice about disclosure of material uncertainties, and when the disclosure that's made is often too little and too late. The Interpretations Committee discussed this in November and asked us to draft an error focus amendment to IAS-1 to clarify when a material uncertainty should be identified and what should be disclosed about them. In January, the Interpretations Committee reviewed these proposals and recommended them to you for deliberation. Now, today we'll only ask you the first two questions in paragraph 3 about this paper: whether you agree with the Interpretations Committee recommendation to propose an amendment, and whether you have any comments or queries on the proposed amendment contained in appendices A and B to this paper. We'll return to you at a subsequent meeting with the due process to ask you whether you approve exposing the proposed amendments. Now, as I've said, we conducted outreach on this topic in accordance with the Interpretation Committee's usual process, but that outreach was wider than usual, and it included regulators and accounting firms as well as IFAS, who are usual contacts. We received 24 responses to the outreach, and we summarized those responses on pages 5 to 12 of the paper. Following on from those points that were raised, in paragraph 49, we outline what the basis of that we've used in drafting the amendments. We've basically altered as little as possible, and in particular, we've left the guidance about going concern as a basis of preparation substantially unchanged. We've inserted foreseeable future rather than just future into the standard, because that agrees with the wording that's used in the conceptual framework. Part of the confusion, we think, with constituents has been that the standard contains two different ideas: going concern as a basis of preparation and disclosures about material uncertainties. And so we restructured the guidance into three sections to make that separation clearer: basis of preparation, identifying material uncertainty, and disclosure. We've received conflicting advice at the Interpretations Committee and in outreach about the level of detail of the guidance. Some like indicators and examples and some don't, and we intend including a question in the exposure draft about whether that guidance itself is useful. So the proposed amendment to IAS-1 recommended by the Interpretations Committee is in Appendix A in a clean format and in Appendix B in markup. And the question for you in paragraph 50 today is, do you agree with the Interpretation Committee's recommendation to propose a narrow-focused amendment to IS-1? And do you have any comments or queries on the proposed amendment to IS-1, which is contained in the appendices?
Do our standards ever require to make estimates about the unforeseeable future? Is that possible at all? What is the added value of saying foreseeable future?
Well, it's a notion we use to define, a certain period of time. We think that we can see up to 12 months, and after we come blind. We become blind after 12 months. So that
is sort of weird.
Yes, I disagree with the staff's recommendation with several reasons. And first, I don't think IS-1 itself as a literature is unclear. I don't think it's unclear. It's clear. And I understand there are some divergences. And also, I understand outside environment and request. However, I think it can be sorted out. It could be dealt with the auditing standard or some ordinance or guidance by the regulators. So first, that's the first reason. And judgment of going concern is highly related to the economic and the legal environment of each jurisdiction. And each regulatory body or each jurisdiction already have their own guidance. So if we provide the guidance like this, it would be overlap, and that may cause some confusion within each jurisdiction. That is the second reason. And the third reason is it will cause, again, disclosure overload. So now we are tackling, reducing disclosure. So this amendment is totally against our effort. That is the third reason. And fourth reason is such disclosure might cause overkill. So as going concern is a very, very sensitive issue, and we have to be very careful for this type of disclosure. And if that is the case, we need more time. So that's the fourth reason. And the fifth is about the future, foreseeable future. I understand you want to keep the consistency with the conceptual framework. And I do see some reasonable reason to change the word. But if we replace this word to the foreseeable future, my concern is it may mean that we are incorporating some bright line for the word of foreseeable future. Because foreseeable future is the word which could be used in many other places. So if we put the foreseeable in this IS-1, it could automatically mean 12 months or longer or something. So I have some concern on doing this. So with all these reasons, I disagree with staff's recommendation.
Philippe?
Wayne wanted to get in.
Well, just one observation about the question of some of the issues that TAC raised. In preparing for this, I took a look at several high-profile bankruptcies, to use my background, that have occurred in the recent months and looked at the disclosures. What we're proposing here is significantly less than what some of those companies were already doing. So we're just putting a baseline. This is not disclosure overload. If you looked at, and obviously I'm not going to mention the names of individual companies, but if you looked at some of those annual reports and the footnote disclosures, you would find that it's already much more extensive than this. The concern is that has been expressed to us and has been expressed in several venues is putting a baseline. under this, number one. Number two, making clear, as April said, the distinction between the decision of whether or not you are a going concern, which is absolutely jurisdiction specific and you can't do anything in the stand, and the disclosures in the financial statements leading up to that point. And so I think it's important, at a minimum, the restructuring that April mentioned, I think it is an important step in the standard.
Philippe.
I think it's an improvement. It is an improvement to the clarity of the standard. I think we should not leave it to regulators to decide. I think we should have standards which are clear. My only concern is in the disclosures that you propose. And I think we need to spend a little bit of time on whether we are realistic about what we expect to see. When a company is in dire condition, yes, you normally find a lot of disclosures when they try to survive. But this disclosures here will happen or take place any time you have a material uncertainty, which is much broader than being in a very difficult situation. And what we propose to disclose is not only to identify uncertainties, which is fine, especially if they are regarded as material, but then to provide information to enable users to assess the feasibility of the remedial actions, and then to understand the effect of any significant future transactions that may be taken by management. Any significant future transaction that may be taken. Isn't that kind of forward-looking information? And yesterday we discussed in the conceptual framework that financial statements should describe the present and past transactions and what is known today. And here it's going to go into a discussion of any potential transaction that may be taken by management. Well, I wonder whether we were not at risk of having either boilerplate type of disclosures or a full novel about what could I do? I have a difficulty. What could I do? Then I can try to describe all 25 different scenarios which are possible. And this has to be audited, by the way, and auditors have to form an opinion on that. I'm not sure we are not a bit too optimistic in trying to really enable users to understand what's going to happen.
We specifically included the part about the future transactions because I think the disclosures are important for two reasons. One, just to disclose the fact of the material uncertainties so that people are aware that there are doubts about that.
That's fine.
But the other thing, and it particularly came from investors, is that they want information about the future avoiding transactions that might happen, like a rights issue, like refinance scheduling, like closing down loss-making entities, simply because those are the types of future transactions that they can't predict from the underlying trends. And so that information about how the business might change in future is particularly relevant to them.
That's okay if there is a plan. If there is a definite plan, if management has already undertaken certain action plans to remedy the problem, that's fine, that should be disclosed. My problem is the word that may be taken in the future. There might be no decision at all today, and then you have, if I apply this disclosure in a very strict way, I have to explain whatever I can think of as a solution, and none of that can be material.
So it's more transactions proposed by management to ensure that
contemplated by management.
Considered,
because then there is a beginning of something that you should disclose, but otherwise,
with
a catalogue of all possibilities to get out of the mess.
I don't agree to that. I think in a company or in a real crisis situation, I think it's impossible for management to describe what they are really, how they're managing that situation. I think I think an indication of Wayne was that it works today. I mean, if you really run into this severe difficulties, how the heck should you describe, I might do this, I might do a shares issue or whatever. I think it's a day by day, week by week management if you're into this mess.
Although
that is the important information, that you are in mess.
I mean, the concern that we had was that there were a number of jurisdictions where they they thought quite rightly came to the conclusion that if they had decided they were a going concern for the basis of preparing the financial statements, then there couldn't be any material uncertainties, and the uncertainties have gone away and there is nothing to disclose. And that's why we're trying to sort of clarify for people. Admittedly, in some jurisdictions, there is adequate disclosure. There is a lot of disclosure. Whether that's because of the corporate culture or whether it's because of a history of regulation, we don't know. But it's certainly quite clear that in a number of jurisdictions, if you prepare the accounts at a going concern basis, there's nothing uncertain about it.
But I suppose in these situations that investors are completely on top of a company,
yes,
they'll ask for information.
I think this will give a false feeling of security.
But they don't get it.
Yeah. They do.
No, but will they get it through a disclosure requirement?
You need one.
Martin.
Yeah, first I agree with Jan. I think disclosure is too much detail, and I also could imagine, if you are in this kind of crisis situation, that you cannot give all this kind of detailed information. Maybe you don't have that, and also maybe it is not the benefit of a kind of company in this crisis situation than to come a plan if you have to disclose already before you have really taken decisions. But I'm more concerned in the main difficulty in kind of this situation is when do you have to give this disclosure, I think. And based on your paper, I think there was significant diversity among the respondents when you should really give this disclosure. And I'm really concerned what we're proposing is then in 25C, because we are eliminating really the words then of material uncertainties, and we're eliminating related to events or conditions that may cast significant doubt about what the entity's ability continue. And my understanding is what we are doing here, we lowering the threshold when we have to give this disclosure. And I'm really not sure if that is the right thing. And if you look at what the FASB is proposing, they give really guidance. If it is more likely than not, then you start this disclosure. So I really think, based on my understanding, is the most difficult thing in this kind of situation is when do you start to give this disclosure? Because it is, can be a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy to doing that. And based on the drafting here, I think we're lowering this threshold, but really don't give more guidance when we should do that. And that is really, for me, I don't know if we should do that.
I think we are lowering the threshold, certainly in comparison with the FASB. And I think there's a good reason for that. We have very different definitions of what is a going concern. Our definition is that you're a going concern unless you're about to liquidate or you have no feasibility. So it's a very high threshold for us. You're really a going concern unless you're just about to default. And because we've got this very high threshold, I think we also need a very wide requirement to disclose those material uncertainties. The FASB's definition of going concern is whether an entity is able to realize its assets and discharge its liabilities in the normal course of business. And because of that, they have many more entities who are not going concerns than we would, because we take into account the avoiding action that the board can take. Now, because of that, the FASB have said that they will only require entities to disclose these uncertainties if the entity itself is likely to become an ongoing concern.
And have we considered lowering the threshold itself?
Well, I think we're taking the point, we will have different disclosures, I think. They will only disclose material uncertainties about those entities that are more likely than not to go down the going concern route. We will require all entities to disclose uncertainties if they're material uncertainties about their ability to continue.
But my point was, rather than having this high threshold with lots of disclosures, have we committed lowering the threshold?
We haven't, because the outreach that we did suggested that threshold works very well in practice and that it's well understood and it's very clear.
But one question, look at page 27. Maybe I'm misreading that.
Which page?
27. Page 27 and 25C. And my understanding is what we here have deleted is the words related to events of conditions that may be cast significant doubt. And if you're really eliminating these words, based on my reading, we have the threshold going further down. Because I think what the most difficult thing is, and that's what I said, is, okay, when do you start?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Based on that reading here, I think we don't give more guidance when we should start on that with this new proposal. But what we are doing is we're eliminating some words which would indicate that we're lowering the threshold. That is at least my reading.
And we did use those words because people thought that may indicate significant doubt were all very subjective words and didn't actually help people in making an assessment. Can I just go back to the FASB and Hans' question about should we alter our definition of going concern so that it's a lower level? I think it's worth noting that at the FASB, they have a project on having two bases of preparing financial statements, either a liquidation basis or a going concern basis. At the moment in IFRS, we are just going concern financial statements. We're not dealing with the liquidation basis.
Okay. We go.
I support the tax ideas. If we really want to do so, we should do more work. And Tuck mentioned many reasons. I just report to you my recent meeting with my Chinese friend who is member of IWSB. And IWSB is now trying to set in standards related to this. And what he complained to me are relevant to our work. And firstly, he told me, it'd be really hard because a few big countries behind this curtain. And sometimes, security regulators even participate in their discussions. And so they should be independent auditing standard setters. But they feel hard how to reconcile, Chinese regulators, the American regulators, European regulators' views, because different countries now face different problems.
That's it.
And secondly, the key problem is whether such kind or some of the disclosure should be in and out of financial reporting. Now, we touched this one in the conceptual level, and I'm sure Ian or other mentioned, some of the information should be in financial statement or not. And the auditors worry very much. If, let's assume, we decide to require, then normally what standards required will be under the auditors should audit it on it and give opinion. And they feel also very hard some of the information will require. And of course, they not discuss our proposal. They discuss some of the, pressures from the regulators. And as I said, the main concern is whether it should be in financial reports or should be in main commentary. And this second issue, I think it's relevant to our discussion. Third one is related timing. We set standards mainly for periodic reports. And if you look at the companies, close to collapse, and waiting for the annual reports in normally to later, and so their discussion is I fully agree with. That is, a lot of disclosures by the security regulators on ongoing basis, we normally call the current report, should be strengthened. And of course, the annual report, we should do something too. But a lot of things should be, as I said, they strengthen the current report's requirement by the security regulator. It is outside of the normal financial reporting. So basically, what I want to say, I fully agree with Tuck, if we do want to do so, I think we have to be careful and try to work with others and not go too faster than others.
Mary?
I think the project is one that we should do. I think it would be helpful to respond to some of the criticisms of the usefulness of financial reporting in the wake of the financial crisis about missing disclosures. Now, in terms of what's proposed here, I have several significant concerns with what is here. First of all, I think this may be a time when vocabulary matters a lot. And there's a certain magic about the phrase, and I think it's the phrase that Martin was pointing to, that's used in paragraph 25. Material uncertainties that cast significant doubt on an entity's ability to continue as a going concern. That's what distinguishes a disclosure and says, warning flag, from here are business risks and the kind of thing that you might expect up front. I think there's probably a good project somewhere on risk disclosures, but this project should not be it. And I think we've veered off in the specific proposals into more general risk disclosures. And I think the same way that we've said that there's value to having a high hurdle, and that high hurdle is what's in place in the U.S. as well right now, because there's not a lot of liquidation basis financial statements prepared for general purpose financial reporting. It's, you know, it's a high hurdle in practice right now in the U.S. But the phrase that there's a material uncertainty about the ability, entity's ability to continue as a going concern is a really important flag, you know, in the disclosure. And I think some of the problems we might have seen before is people having disclosures about risk, but not saying, look at this, this is a material uncertainty. And so what we may want to do is force labeling of that as the kind of uncertainty that paragraph 25 is identifying. I think if you're hearing that in some jurisdictions, people are saying it's either going concern and there are no material uncertainties, or we only disclose material uncertainties if we're not doing going concern. That's just misreading example 20, you know, paragraph 25 today, because you couldn't have a situation if you thought it was exactly tied to going concern. You couldn't have a situation where you were preparing on a going concern basis and have a disclosure about material uncertainties. And clearly we think in paragraph 25 that there are times when you will have that disclosure. We've prepared on a going concern basis, but we have material uncertainties. And so, you know, maybe going back and emphasizing somehow, and I think you've looked at, a way to do that in the proposals. But I think we should scale back significantly what is proposed here, because I think we've gone way off into the territory of general risk discussion, and we should be focusing in more. But I think we should be doing something, and I think indirectly in paragraphs 25 big D or big E, I think that's where you're kind of focusing on the type of judgment that's discussed in IS-1, I think it's paragraphs 122 and 123 about significant judgments and estimates. And maybe the thing we want to bring up and perhaps ask the IFRIC to bring up and discuss is, so you have events and uncertainties that raise questions. You've got to conclude whether or not there's a material uncertainty. If there is a material uncertainty, I think it's pretty clear you have to disclose it. If there's not a material uncertainty, is there a significant judgment or estimate? Having said, this looks like it could be a material uncertainty, but don't worry, we're okay, that paragraph 122, 123 would say you should disclose. Let's think about that, but if so, I think we should tie it much more explicitly to that, again, to avoid the risk of turning this into a general business risk discussion. And then I think we could move forward with something more focused.
Mary, could I pick up on one point you made?
Yeah.
I think I agree with this. My reading of the existing 25 says, if you determine that it is a going concern, but you've got material uncertainties disclosed, which is
exactly
what you said. But if you've determined that it's not a going concern, all you have to disclose is the factors that led you to that conclusion, and then you're reporting on a different...
And not prepare on a going concern basis.
Yeah, and but these proposals to me say, you even if you've decided you're not a going concern, you have to start discussing material uncertainties. And I don't think that's what the existing 25 says, and I think it's the way you structure your proposal.
Because that's certainly not the intention of this draft.
Well, if you read on material uncertainties in your proposals, you know...
I mean, originally that paragraph which says if you're not a going concern, you should disclose this fact, that was at the very end of the drafting. So if we put that at the very end, so it was clear that it was outside.
And make it clear that material uncertainties are foregone.
And
companies assessed as a going concern.
We have certainly tried in the drafting to make it very clear that throughout we're talking about material uncertainties, about an entity's ability to continue as a going concern.
And as I said, I think vocabulary matters here much more than it usually does in terms of, you know, normally we don't care exactly what word you use for a line item, but I think here we care.
Maybe you can clarify 25C by saying, and nevertheless, continues to prepare the financial statements on a going concern basis, then you disclose. That would address your point, yeah.
I think one observation that the interpretations can be made, and I have a proposal in mind here, but yes. Number one, you cannot, if you present your financial statements on other than a going concern basis, you cannot maintain that they are IFRS financial statements.
Exactly.
Because IFRS financial statements are predicated on going concern. So once you've tripped over, you're on some other basis that we don't know what it is, and it's not our standard. That's step one. I'm hearing from board members a lot of drafting advice and ways that this could be made more clear. At the end of this discussion, since the Interpretations Committee thought it had a pretty good package when it sent it here, or it wouldn't have done it, may I ask for board member volunteers to advise the staff on the redrafting that needs to be done, and then propose that we would bring it back to the board? I don't see any reason to recycle this back through the Interpretations Committee.
Yes.
So.
Yes, can we support this suggestion?
Yes.
Okay, so and I see 1, 2, 3 volunteers over there.
Otherwise, I'll applaud you.
Could I give that to our auditor also? That's a good thing.
Patricia, are you going to be involved?
Take.
You're just your observer. If not, I would like to be involved.
Duck is also appointed as volunteer.
I'm not quite supporting, but just one word. And I still don't think it's the area of us. So I don't think we should step in too further. So, of course, it would be nice if we could provide very good guidance. That would be nice because this is a part of accounting standard. However, this is not the area where we are good at. So I don't think we should.
Tuck is no longer appointed as a volunteer. Exactly. He is disappointed.
I think 3 is probably as much help as the staff can bear.
If he's not there, I volunteer.
Done.
4 then. As much help as.
Can I ask a question?
As we can bear.
April, I guess. Coming back to the questions that you have in the paper. I've moved off that to the conceptual framework here. I'll bear with me one second. The proposals that you had, and Mary has brought this up in her comments, talk about making disclosures with respect to an entity's ability to continue as a going concern. As you rightly so, this was a question I raised last month. My concern was the difference between our view of a going concern and the FASB's, okay? And thank you for identifying that in the paper. My concern is, in fact, that the threshold is too high, i.e., it's predicated on whether you intend to liquidate. So, I mean, if you're only going to give the disclosures when you're going to liquidate, it's too late, right? The cow's out of the barn. So the question then becomes, when do you, as Martin said, start to provide disclosures about material uncertainties? You're still going concern, but when you would provide those disclosures. So if, in fact, we go down that path, okay, are we going to be in sync with the IAASB in terms of what their thinking is
yes.
on this?
Yes.
We've been consulting with the IAASB, who are the submitter throughout this process, and I think they were happy with the proposals and the disclosure guidance.
PK?
April, in this excitement, I think we should not miss congratulating you for an excellent paper. I think you have done an outstanding job. I have personally seen how much you have worked on it, and I participated in one of the outreaches that we have done with IAASB in a working meeting in London. And I think your paper and our interpretation is very good. I just want to respond to one comment that my good friend from Japan, Taka, says again and again, so I just can't contain myself. I think one has to look back at the history of this issue. To date, U.S. GAAP does not have disclosure on going concern, and they are forced to put it now. So you are asking us to take it out, and U.S. GAAP is being required to do it. It has always been a preserve of auditing standards, AU 560, if I remember correctly, or something. But I think we are, the U.S. FASB is asked to require it. Look at the Sherman inquiry. They have asked for it. UK asked for it. IAAS asked for it. FASB is doing it. And us saying that we are going to shut our doors and not worry about it, I think it's been foolhardy.
I do understand the point, but can I?
Oh, I'm not complete yet. Yeah. The thing we need to get is that, first of all, as April correctly pointed out several times in this meeting, the going concern, which worries me personally, that ours is a very high threshold, which Pat Finnegan is touching on it, and which Hans asked to lower it. Okay, that's a different project, but be that as it may, what we have, I think, given that we need to have a threshold for disclosure, we can, I think Mary is very right in saying that perhaps we are veering a little bit into risk, and which is risk disclosure, and I think we are mixing it. And I think that's a very good observation, and one we touched on it in IAASB meeting. But there should be a standard for the objective, disclosure objective, and I think we are doing that. We can quibble, and I think Mary is absolutely right in saying that vocabulary matters here, and we need to focus on it. To Philip's point about future and foreseeable future and linking it to it, it's always a big question. I think we have another paper which is coming up. I don't know whether we're going to discuss it now, but what is a period of assessment? It's a big issue in the auditing world and also for the preparers. Do I need to look at 12 months, 15 months, 20 months, or 100 months? So I think this brings some clarity to that by foreseeable future, because people know it's 12 months. I really think
12,
we could...
Is it 12 months? Huh? Foreseeable future is 12 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's arbitrary, but we have to have a rule, because if you take a car company in Europe, an automaker company, if you have to think about the foreseeable future being 24, 36, 50 months, then you are in total in the blue.
Yeah.
So let's, no, I think let's decide.
Well, even 12 months is a long horizon for many of those companies.
It's going
to be long. We can set impairment for foreseeable future, not 12 months.
One background of this whole discussion is, of course, that before the financial crisis, I don't think one single bank raised the issue of going concern. I'm also convinced that this is not going to, because the fact was that nobody saw the crisis coming. And so I do not think this is going to change a whole lot, but
I don't know whether we should give a going concern for Cyprus banks, or is it because Russians are going to give it, so there is no going concern? I was thinking last night when I was thinking of, but I think
future there is 3 days.
I think very clearly what Mary said is appropriate. This project should be on. I don't think we should derail it, and we should not postpone it either. I think we should do it.
I think
Wayne's point is very appropriate to say, let us try to bring it as a package. But I don't think this is an idea to derail, given the input we got from so many people.
Yeah.
Sherman Inquiry, UK,
IAASB. I completely agree.
But not always do they lead to improvements. political gimmicks like that. I mean,
we talk about
companies who are really going into bankruptcy one day or another. Take Greece, for example. I mean, what the heck are we helped by them coming out with a quarterly report in April or June or May or somewhere and saying, yes, we had a problem end of March? I mean, this is management. I think the more we try to make sort of pattern around this, people will get a false sense of security. Oh, yes, there are a lot of disclosures here. You can be relaxed. And, of course, management will write all the nice things they can. We will issue more capital. We have negotiations with the bank.
On the other hand, you know, it might force management to write down earlier when they have serious problems than is currently the case. That also, of course, depends very much how regulators in the future use this.
But should we really improve, we should say, as soon as you are having doubts about this, you should make it public, regardless of your reporting, the normal reporting sequence. You should issue a press release, and that is what the regulator is doing.
Yeah, this is my idea.
Yeah, but IFRS does not just apply to private publicly traded companies, and ISAs apply for everybody, and these standards can apply for non-public, but people who have banks, people who have bank loans, things
and,
like that.
And you cannot rely, if you have a set of financial statements in circulation with notes appended to it, you cannot say, well, I don't have to disclose it because I did disclose it in a press release, and it put a communication to the press, so I don't have to put it in my financial report. No, you can't rely. Financial statements should be standalone as much as possible.
Yes.
No, I'm not against it. I'm not against it.
Well, I propose.
Can I quickly respond? Thank you very much for your comment. And I think I do understand the environment now. That is why I strongly against this proposal, because my worry is overlap by the regulator. Each regulator has precise rules like this. And Japan has experienced the financial crisis 20 years ago. We had similar rules, and we had a huge debate concerning this issue. And so situation is same in each jurisdiction, and each regulators have strong concern on this going concern issue. So my worry is overlapping with the regulator's requirement, and we have to sort out those confusion if we take this. So therefore, we have to be very responsible for these guidance. And I'm not quite sure we have a determined mind to tackle this issue now, whereas we are challenging this culture overall. So that is my concern. That is the final word.
Okay. I suggest that we follow up Wayne's suggestion, which is that April comes with an adjusted paper and uses the input of some volunteer board advisors. Yes? Okay, that brings us to the end of this issue.
There is a further paper 3B, but I'm not sure if there's any appetite to
do it. I think this follows that.
Yeah. Okay, before we have a break, I want to announce a slight change of schedule. We'll bring forward revenue recognition to 1:30, then 2:15 NCI groups.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.